Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Naked Sports Show. This week is Obscure Sports Week, so I thought, why not start with an obscure track? Good evening, Roger.
Evening, Phil, and can I just say what a pleasure it is to listen to the fine work of Mr. Derek Griffiths, who, in my opinion, is the most influential black singer-songwriter from Britain in the 1970s.
You're talking about Kids TV.
Oh, well, certainly about Kids TV, but in general, his work really stands the test of time. Lovely to hear old Derek there again. Perhaps we should invite him on the show.
Perhaps we should. Being
on Facebook, you know.
Are you?
Yeah. Anyway, that's by the by.
By the way, bearing in mind there's only 1 week left after this week, then time's against us somewhat.
Yeah,
but anyway,
book him in for next year, don't you?
Yeah, get him down on next year's list. We'd also welcome tonight's guest. We've got Naked Football regular and Monday show presenter Graham Blackburn.
Bonjour.
And his lovely lady friend Rowena Mackey.
Good evening, listeners.
How are we all? Anyway, yes, as mentioned, it's Obscure Sports this week on the Naked Sports Show, so... as well as asking the regular questions, which sports we've been watching this week, which obscure sports have we been watching this week? Roger.
Well, obscure sports, I consider golf quite obscure. I've been watching a bit of that. Pádraig Harrington winning for the Irish again. Obscure sports, I was unfortunate enough to miss all the obscure sports we're about to talk about this week because they are on a certain subscription-only sports channel, which... basically, you go into a pub and say, can you put this on? Unless it's a certain pub in Ipswich called McGinty's, I'll give them a plug. If you want your Irish sports, McGinty's is a place to go. But apart from the Open, really, I didn't see much of the abject cricket defeat. But that was pretty poor, I think we'll all agree.
Splutters in the corner there from Mr. Blackburn.
Splutters indeed, yeah. Well, I managed to see an obscure spot. I saw a bit of hurling in... Belfast, because I was over there watching the Town lose. No, they play quite well, really. And because Town and lose always go together, don't they?
Not this season, right? Where's your optimism?
No. A glass half empty, you see, that's the trouble, always am.
Yeah.
Not empty for long in Belfast, though.
No. Well, the white bit's still at the end, but the black had gone. Yes, watched a bit of hurling in a pub, as you do, and actually bumped into a hurling goalkeeper, and I was going to, as I said to Vulture earlier, going to talk to him about why on earth would he be a hurling goalkeeper. But we're going to come to that later, aren't we?
We are going to talk about hurling goalkeepers, and there is a patch of a book I want to read to you, a small passage of a book that kind of sums the whole thing up, we'll get to that a bit later, the old hurling goalkeeper debate, because it's quite hilarious. And do you know what game it was? Was it the Cork-Galway?
It was Cork-Galway, yes.
Cork-Galway, yeah. Yes. I'm off to Ireland tomorrow myself, and yes. I'll be seeing the Cork against Clare match, amongst others.
Hurling?
In Hurling, yeah, the All-Ireland quarter-finals.
That'll be great.
As well as Wexford and Waterford.
Is it at Cork?
It's in Turles, in County Tipperary, which is handy, because me and the friend I'm going with based ourselves in Dublin for that weekend. So right. Thank you to the GAA for switching the game from Croke Park to Turles and making us... spend €60 on a return train ticket.
What was the reason for switching it anyway?
They like to keep wear off the pitch at Croke Park. Ooh. So they'll put something up saying this game's at Croke Park, and then all of a sudden a week before the game they'll say no, we're going to transfer it to somewhere else because they don't want Croke Park to be sliced up, which is a problem because they've got all the other sports in there now. It used to be solely for day sports.
There's rugby and football there now as well, isn't there?
Yeah,
so... Alan Ferguson's not their groundsman, is he, by any chance? That sounds like our reserve matches.
Yeah, quite possibly. No, I was there once when I actually sowed a bit of synthetic grass into the pitch. About 4 years ago.
So does that mean Cork lose home advantage then?
No, they're playing on neutral ground.
But aren't they supposed to, quarterfinals, they used to play, draw like they do in football, don't they?
They used to play the quarterfinals in Croke Park. The quarterfinals, the semis, and the finals.
Oh, right, so they're all neutral venues.
Yeah, neutral venues. Unless Dublin never do anything in hurling, they're a football camp, generally. But there is one obscure sport that I was handy literally minutes before we went on air, Phil. And Rowena is going to come in on this one. Ultimate Frisbee. Can you explain to me Ultimate Frisbee?
Well, oh, hello. Ultimate Frisbee, I think it's got its origins in Canada. I'm quite sure that's where it first started. And it's kind of an end zone game, played on a rectangular pitch. And basically you need to throw the frisbee around to your teammates to eventually throw it to someone in your scoring end zone to achieve the points. very skillful game, requires a shed load of fitness to play it at the most competitive level, very fast match, and then, you know, the rules are all to do with if it's thrown out or if it's dropped or whatever. Obviously, if it's intercepted, then it's just play on, and that's kind of really the game. You know, it's a great game. It's fabulous.
Is it one of these where if you catch the frisbee, you're not allowed to move, you have to kind of find a teammate?
Yeah, that's right. Once you catch it, I think you've got a time limit and a movement limit within which you need to throw the frisbee on or pass the frisbee on, or the disc, they call them. They don't call them frisbees. And at the highest level, it's just a superb match. It's just so fast and really skillful because, you know, they do all those throws from behind their back and, you know, from between their legs and, you know, all sorts of stuff, you know. It's really very good.
And take it you've played this game, or you...
I have played this game, yes. Like I say, it requires a huge amount of endurance and stamina, as well as speed, to be fair. And it's far more difficult to make an accurate throw than what it appears.
Right.
And, you know, particularly when you've got moving opposition and, you know, throwing into space and, you know, not getting a call on the wind and all that sort of stuff, so... Yeah.
And is there a local club or anything where...
No, I used to play it in Australia. I'm not aware of it being played over here, and in fact it reminds me of a day up in the at Christchurch Park not so long ago when the Silver Fox demonstrated his ultimate skills that he didn't have, so it's probably a good thing it's not played over here.
I am aware of kind of variations of the frisbee scene. There's the one they play at the University of Essex, isn't there? Where they have golf. It's like a frisbee version
frisbee
of golf.
Yeah, that's rubbish. It's rubbish.
Yeah, well, you heard it here first. I mean, they've done it too loud around the University of Essex. They're very proud of their golf course. But it's like the metal chain they throw.
Yeah.
I've seen them there at the University of Essex. I often wondered what they're for. Now I know. I thought it was some kind of bizarre assault course.
You take your disc down, you can have it. You can have a round. Is it a par three or par four? It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, give it a try. So with Ultimate Frisbee, then how many do they have on the side and how big's the pitch?
The pitch is probably football. Gosh, that's a very good question. Maybe three quarters of a football pitch, I would say, and it's seven aside. I believe.
So there's quite a bit of space then. So when you've got the frisbee and you're about to pass it on to the next person, are the opposition allowed to crowd you right in your face, or is they're allowed to get close to you before they...
Yeah, there's rules. It's a bit like netball. There's sort of a no contact and 3 foot kind of rule.
Right.
And like I say, it's ever so fast. So really, if you find yourself in a bit of space, you just need to... Timing's key, actually, amongst the whole, you know, the whole team and setting your moves up. So,
Australia seem to have been world champions just about every sport. Australia been the world champions at Ultimate Frisbee as well?
If we haven't already, we're probably on our way, and I think it's a good time to mention Cadel Evans in the Tour de France and how well good old Cads is doing, and it looks like he might be the first Australian ever to win the Tour de France. So, Australians, I do think there's a weather element. I mean, it's easy to get outside and have a run around. Mm. And, you know, that's what you do, really. Unless you're a couch potato.
It does seem to be something in the Australian sporting mentality that first is first and then winning is everything and second's nowhere. I mean, which we don't have in this country, obviously. We like a glorious failure, don't we? I think that probably explains a lot of... And also, the Australian government, do spend a lot of money on sport, don't they?
They do spend a lot of money on sport, but as I've discussed a number of times on previous editions of this show or incarnations of this show, the Australian government spend a lot of money on their elite sports people. So the top sort of 1% of the sporting population attracts 95% of the funding.
So
it's kind of a misnomer, really, that it you know, funds sport generally very well.
So your Ian Thorpes are going to get loads of money spent on them, whereas your kind of... Third choice Aussie rules footballer from Collingwood doesn't get anything. Is that what we're saying?
Well, your third, maybe not from Collingwood. Maybe your your kidder who's out in the outback in the desert somewhere. He's not going to get much, or she isn't going to get much at all. So,
good time to mention Australian rules, Phil. You've got Satanta. Have you seen any of it lately on the?
I
haven't seen any of it for a while. I see bits of it on the internet. Graham, have you ventured down on
that? Someone once bought me, I went to watch the game at, where was it, Melbourne, wasn't it?
Yeah, MCG. Only place to watch it, it's like Wembley, isn't it, for us?
It's massive, the pitch is like 4 miles wide. It's incredible, isn't it?
The pitch is massive.
There must be thick guys.
Yeah.
It's a bogus game, but...
I've tried to come up with an interesting fact about each of our featured sports tonight. Sadly, I didn't come on with one for Ultimate Frisbee. If I'd have known, I'd have looked one up.
Sorry about that, Vulture.
That's all right. Here's your internet. Here's your fast fascinating fact about the AFL, right? After the NFL in America, the American football, it's the second most watched domestic championship anywhere in the world.
Really?
Really?
Yep, they have average crowds of over 30,000, and you probably well know for a finals match, so well over 100,000.
Well, absolutely, because I play that at the MCG, and they absolutely pack that out big time. Yeah.
Is that watched as in watched live or watched on
TV?
Watched
live.
Yeah, watched live at the venue.
Okay.
It's amazingly popular. I mean, obviously, I don't have a local team because I've never been to Australia, but the one I always looked out for was Collingwood.
Yeah.
Who I understand is the team everybody hates down under.
Absolutely. It's interesting because the AFL actually started as the VFL, the Victorian Football League, and that's why it's predominantly based in Victoria, and a lot of the teams are in and around Melbourne. But like most sports, they've tried to nationalise to some extent, and they've actually done a really good job of it, and it's just... It's just a fab game. It's a really rubbish TV game because, you know, you kind of see someone kick the ball and then you don't see anything else and then you see someone trying to catch a ball. Mm-hmm. And you really do have to watch the game live because there's so much play off the ball. And as Graham just alluded to, the pitch is just so massive that that you can't appreciate just what a great game it is.
When you say there's play off the ball, do you mean punch-ups?
No, I mean there's no offside and you're allowed to shepherd. So what that means is, you know, a ball carrier could be just defended from all over the place by his teammates taking out, you know, all the opposition and stuff like that. I mean, you don't often get, well, you get fights, you know, like in any time if people are getting het up. But generally speaking, no, the play off the ball, you know, all the leads that are made and because, I mean, it's about, I think there's about 16 or 17 players on the pitch at any given time.
18 aside.
Yeah, 18. Yeah. Thanks, Walter. Sorry. And, you know, there's a lot, there is just an enormous amount of work off the ball. There really is. So in terms of being a TV sport, it's not particularly... doesn't transfer particularly well.
It does have a reputation in this country, doesn't it? I mean, for people who don't actually watch the game and who've kind of heard about it, the old joke is, oh, Australian, no rules. There are no rules to the game. But there are rules to the game.
There are rules to the game.
And
there's not a lot of rules, but they're simple rules. And they're rules that ensure that it's a free-flowing, exciting, mostly aerial game in a lot of respects. So, for example, you know, you can only run a certain amount of distance with the ball, and you either have to kick it, pass it. You can't just pass it. It has to be what's called a handball, where you punch it out of your hand, or you have to bounce it. And, of course, it's an oval-shaped ball, so to bounce one of those while you're running at full pace and you've got, you know, 18 guys trying to swoop down on you is not an easy task.
You could go anywhere.
You should be so lucky.
And the scoring system as well, is there?
Oh, yeah.
6 points for a goal, is it?
Six points for a goal and 1 point for a behind. So we often get a lot of jokes that it's the only game where you can score if you miss.
Yeah, that's right.
It sounds like your kind of game, Vulture. No offside, you score if you miss.
Yeah, I
haven't seen you on the football pitch.
In front of the post, do my usual trick, stick it wide. I've still got a point.
But it's quite interesting because there's goal umpires, obviously, in the game and in the match, and it's up to them to decide whether it's a behind or a goal, and some of it's quite difficult to judge. And they're very animated in how they do their hand signals about whether it's a goal or a behind, and you know, they're almost, what's the word, they're almost kind of Nazi efficiency in how they move and walk and animate what's going on, so it's interesting.
Yeah. There's another cup cycle, either.
No, I was just going to say, I mean... it's probably a good point, a good way now of moving on to the GAA sports over in Ireland.
Because there is, I was going to say,
is one game derived from the other?
There is a considerable crossover between Aussie rules and Gaelic football. The extent now, a lot of Irish players who are going from the GAA, which is an amateur sport, you don't get paid for playing Gaelic football or hurling. And there's a lot of Aussie rules scouts come over, find a good player. A good example is lately... Collingwood's Martin Clark, who played for Down Miners GAA football last year, and was recruited by the GAA. So there is a crossover,
a definite crossover between the two.
Yeah, but
every year they have. Sorry to interrupt. Every year they have a sort of a you know, world championship almost between an Australian team and an Irish team,
international rules.
Yeah,
they kind of.
Amalgamate the rules
and then go for it. Yeah,
it's quite a spectacle. I remember seeing it a few years ago. It's a hell of a game to watch.
If you think about it, hurling's similar as well. Apart from the fact that you've got a hurley or a stick, the principle's still the same. You can't hold the ball. If you run, you've got to keep it bouncing on you, and you get three for a goal and one for over the top, just like you do in Gaelic football. Very similar.
They are so similar. They're actually regarded like football, rugby league, and rugby union. Football regarded as codes of football. They regard hurling and Gaelic football as different codes.
Yeah.
So rather than being different sports, they refer to them as the small ball code, which is hurling,
oh, right,
and your large ball code, which is your GAA. Yeah. I was quite interested about the GAA situation in that quite a few of the provinces are quite uncompetitive in that Dublin always win Leinster. It's either Mayo or Galway in Connacht, and in the other provinces you've got Kerry or Cork will win Munster. The wide open one this year is Ulster, which Fermanagh, one of only two counties in Ireland never to have won the provincial championship. They actually took Armagh to a replay in the final last week, and the replay is on Sunday.
Cool.
So I think we always stick up for Fermanagh because you want to win something for a change.
Right. So I mean, I know Vulture from off air, you're quite an aficionado of your GAA.
Yeah, I am. I think it's generally Irish roots, really. And Graham has witnessed a few games in your time as well, Graham, haven't you?
Well, I have. You're going to tell us all this stuff about the hurling goalkeeper.
Graham and I have had this discussion several times, haven't we, Graham?
Mm.
About the mental stability of hurling goalkeepers. And if anyone wants to get an insight, I recommend the following book. It's called Last Man Standing, Hurling Goalkeepers by Christy O'Connor. And this is an Irish journalist who actually played at the highest level for Clare. He was the sub goalkeeper to the great Davy Fitzgerald in Clare, and he spent a year with all these various goalkeepers. I'm just going to read you an extract from page 27. If you're a little bit squeamish, I do apologise. It's about Joe Quaid, who's the Limerick goalkeeper, and something that happened to him in 1997. It all began when David Cuddy struck a rocket of a penalty that bounced off the ground and Quaid got his body behind it. He knew it had hit him, but he didn't know where. I think we know where this is going, don't we? The ball spilled loose, and as he was trying to scramble it away, the pain kicked in, and he collapsed in a heap. He knew then that the ball had struck him in the testicles. And this is the bit that really shouldn't, but it made me laugh. He played on, but when the pain got worse, 15 minutes into the second half, he signalled to the manager to take him off. They refused to do so.
Take him off or take them off?
They wouldn't take him off. And the story then happened that he'd obviously been hit in the nether regions. One of them had exploded on impact. he had lost half the other one, and he went to hospital. But being a hurling goalkeeper, he was hungry. So he stopped off at the local McDonald's, had a Big Mac, large fries, got to the hospital, where they said, "We've got to operate you on you immediately. When was the last time you ate?" And instead of, "Actually, I'm starving, hungry," they said, "Great, into theatre now," because he'd had a Big Mac and large fries, he had to wait for 6 hours. And then later on in the book it says how the following morning someone came up and asked him if he wanted counselling, and he was reading a report of it in the paper. And he just said, "No, I just want to get right for the Waterford game." These guys are pretty chicken oriental.
Having seen a little bit of the game on TV, it does strike me as surely the world's most ridiculous position in any sport to play.
Sorry, the question was, does he not wear protective gear in that area? So why wasn't he wearing a box?
Apparently not. Well, he does now.
There's nothing there to protect now, is there?
He probably doesn't need to.
After that incident, a lot of goalkeepers now do in that particular area. But of all the positions on the hurling field, you'll often find it's the goalkeeper that wears the least protection. Because most of them wear helmets. Mm. Occasionally some of them wear a glove. But there's no padding at all. And Graham, you have a slitter, I believe, or the ball.
Well, thanks to you, actually. Yes. I'm not sure where it came from. Where did it come from?
I bought it in Ireland, actually.
Yes, you got it. Yeah, I've got one at home somewhere. Mm. And they are, they're very similar to baseballs, but they're like rock. Look, listen. That's a slitter.
Yeah.
It's hard.
And if one of those hits you at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, and the goals are pretty much, if anything, they're very slightly bigger, I think, than a football goal. And you imagine a little ball, like a cricket ball, coming, flying at you from, a foot, if they want to hit it at you from a foot, they will. So.
And you have to stop it with your hurl. Yeah. The goalkeeper has a slightly bigger hurl to stop
very
it.
Very slightly, only about an inch or two.
But it doesn't offer an awful lot of protection against a projectile like that coming at you at a rate of knots.
Absolutely not. And you can't exactly go out for crosses or anything like a goalkeeper.
No.
Go out to claim the cross.
No. Yeah.
You often see, though, the goalkeepers do come out for crosses, miss them completely, and the ball ends up in the back of the net, and it's 3 points against them.
That's probably a safety first measure. Having spoken as a bottom, the very playing at the very bottom of the English game in football, I know if you get a football blaster at you from point blank range, it can hurt.
Yeah.
But one of them things. Oh.
Well, I'll tell you a story about the first time I ever went to Ireland. I went with my friend Dean, who had never seen a game of hurling in his life. And I went to a bar in Dublin and said, look, we're probably going to call it a night now. We want to get home and watch the hurling. And being a good Irish bar, he says, we'll put it on here. Have a few more drinks. So, of course, we did. He put the hurling on. And it was an Ulster hurling final. And there was a penalty. And a hurling penalty is taken from 20 metres. And the ball is basically flipped up by the taker. And he then just...
hits it on the volley.
As hard as possible, in the air, on the volley, towards the goal. And I think it was the interim goalkeeper, got something to it, I think it was his head, and he hit the deck like a sack of the proverbial spuds. And as he hit the deck, Dino, in the middle of this bar in Dublin, shouted out, oh my God, he's dead. Dino thought this guy died. And of course all the Irish kind of give him a steely stare as if to say, well, this is hurling, son.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Yeah, it happens all the time. And in comparison, football is
quite sedate.
Quite sedate, although it does have a fair amount of, like Australian football, Australian rules has quite a high amount of injuries.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting about the goalkeepers, because I think the other worst position in sport would have to be an ice hockey goalkeeper.
Oh,
although the big difference there is they wear full, you know,
the massive, prophylactic
gear.
A lot of padding.
They do. But also that puck comes at them at a phenomenal speed.
I've been to watch ice hockey before, and that is it's a hard thing on ice hockey puck. It's rubberized.
There was a really serious injury. I'm not sure whether he died.
Got him in the voice box, didn't it?
He hit him in the voice box. Completely chopped. You know, he lost his voice and everything. Obliterated his voice box. And now they wear this
There, there was an incident where someone in the crowd actually got hit by a puck and was killed.
Really?
By a flying puck. Mm. They always say if you go to a game, keep your eye on a puck at all times.
Yeah,
but you can't see it. It just goes so fast.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's another game. Ice hockey's
a proud thing to say. How did granddad die? Well, he was hit by a puck in ice hockey. How many people are going to throw that out?
Was he playing? No, watching.
But the interesting thing about ice hockey is they have two sirens on, or you know, siren lights on top of the goals, and you don't actually know whether a goal's been scored until you see the sirens come on, because it's just so fast you can't tell, and the crowd doesn't know until they see the sirens start flashing.
I went to see when I lived in Moscow, I went to see the Russians play the Americans. If you want a dirty game of any sport, that's probably the one you go for. It was a right grudge match, and it's the only time I saw an ice hockey player sent off for the whole match.
They usually go to the bin, don't they?
Yeah, it's the sin bin, isn't it?
Yeah. 5 minutes if they've been really naughty. This guy got a complete match.
But they actually call that, they call it roughing. So there's a certain amount of roughing that you can do. I just think that's fab that you could play a sport where you're allowed to sort of rough. I mean,
it's
brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
What did you do at training today? Oh,
we practiced roughing. But incidentally, while we're on the subject, Phil, Bulger's Bed Shower, our horse that we both hit didn't run last week, did it?
Mine rarely do.
So there was another 0-0 draw last week in that. I've gone for the King George VI and Queen Elizabeth Diamond Stakes at Ascot. I've gone for a horse called Ask, and not Duke of Marmalade, who is the odds-on favourite, Phil. I hope you've noticed this. I've actually gone for a horse that was around about 8-9-1. He had a mare the last time he ran.
Lucky boy.
He had a bit of a mare. So, his previous ones before that were showing fairly good form. So I think I've gone for a bit of an each-way punt on him there. So I'm not holding out much hope of a win, but I think there's a second or third place waiting to happen at odds of
value. Well, from the toddlers' side of the fence, we've got for the second week running, we've gone for the same horse.
Really?
Yeah, we've gone for Ask. I didn't even know which one you'd pick this time, so.
Yeah, so we went for the old toddlers, was it?
Oh, I don't know. I think it was halfway through the list of horses on the computer screen, and that was where she went. She selected one or two and then decided on that one, and I think she's mummy's influence for the restaurant in town.
Oh, well, there you go then.
So he loves the meatballs and pizza in
Cardinal
Park.
Nice and easy to work out, isn't it?
Yeah.
So who's winning out of you two at the moment?
I am beating Phil's 3-year-old daughter at horse racing, Tippy.
Only by virtue of the fact he's picked the favourite virtually every week.
This is a fallacy. I do not pick the favourite every week. Yeah, the horse doesn't know it's favourite. You know, we'll go through his arguments again. I think I'm about £6.99 up on Lauren Mount.
Yeah, she hasn't got any points on the board yet. A few non-runners, and that's as good as it's got. So, anyway, we can't get the Naked Football Show go pass about a few mentions of what's been happening in the more mainstream world, more specifically with Ipswich Town. They finally got the chequebook out. What do we make of the signings, Graham?
Well, Richard Wright, I'm all for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great goalkeeper, and the local lad and everything. Lisby, well, you know, I think
my life horse.
Yeah, my
horse. That's your horse just coming in. Yeah, Lisby. Well, there's a lot of people not particularly happy with that for various reasons, not least, of course, the Cito sending off and playing for that lot down the road. But also, he's never, apart from his 17 goals last year, he's never really done it, has he?
No.
I don't, unless Super Jim can see something we can't, which is more likely.
And he's looked lively when he's played against us, right? Really, yeah. He's in a threat. I seem to remember him scoring that wonder volley against us at the start of the year we got relegated, and then the other obvious connection is the Cito sending off, like, but I mean, he scored 17 goals last year for Colchester, and he's only got 16 in his whole previous 10 years of his career. So,
Well, yeah. I have been impressed with Alkstein and McCauley, though, from what I've seen. Although, again, they're not Premiership sides they've been playing over in Ireland, but they look really calm and collected, and they can distribute the ball better than anyone else in that defence, I think. And they're big guys as well, so they should have a goal or two from the corner.
Yeah, well, I'm delighted with the Richard Wright sign. I mean, for me, he's the best keeper I can remember as having, because I can't really remember Paul Cooper. He was just a bit before my time. So, yeah, I'm delighted he's back. What do we think of the Thatcher possibility?
Thatcher, well, I don't know. Graham saw him play.
You see, he wasn't really stretched at all at that level. He got forward quite well, but he's a fiery temperament.
I'm worried about his temperament.
He lost it a couple of times in Ireland against sort of, you know, equivalent of our third, maybe, conference. So what he's going to do in the Championship, I don't know.
All he needs to do for him to have another Pedro Mendes moment.
He's got 15 game suspension hanging over him, isn't he? As a result of that, it runs out on the 31st of August this year. So if he does anything daft in the first month or so of the season, assuming he signs for us, he's going to be out for a considerable while.
A friend of mine who supports Wimbledon described him as an all right player wrapped up in the mind of a psychopath.
Gosh! I mean, having seen how far we were away from home last year, though, I don't know if a little bit of fire and passion's something maybe we need, a bit of guts and get stuck in when we need to.
Bit of Joe Clades, you know?
But this, the other rumours, though, Skation and Carastia seem to have gone a bit quiet, don't they, the last few days. Now we've had Lisby and Wright making it finally sign on the dotted line.
I'm not convinced about the whole Carastia thing. I think he might be overvalued.
I just don't think it's going to happen. I mean,
one great moment in history, and you know.
Yeah, and he's built his career on it.
In the great
he is a regular international, though.
Yeah,
so he's got to be quite classy.
Yeah, he's got to have a decent pedigree of some description, I think. But I think the Skatial thing, you kind of think, well, apparently everything's been agreed, and he's just stalling on time. Maybe he's trying to clarify this Czech international side. What's going to happen there if he's playing for a team that's not in the upper tier of their respective league? So,
but at least Jim's starting to get some of the players he wants in the building, and they're his words, you know.
I'm sure he's delighted. But then, I mean, Lisby's here now, he's one of ours. Jim's obviously decided he's a player that he wants on his team, and we've got to go with that, I guess, and hope he comes good.
The manager gets paid to make his decisions, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He lives and dies by
himself. Yeah. But the thing is, if Karasteas or Maynard or anyone else for that matter comes in up front, you do wonder what's going to happen with some of the others. I think it wouldn't be at all a surprise if some of the younger lads, maybe your Rhodes, your Clarks, your Bodic, disappeared off on loan for a month or two.
He's already made noises, hasn't he?
He's been dropped from the number one shirt, hasn't he, today?
Has he?
Yeah.
Bit of a bummer, isn't it? Because unless they're going to send him out on loan, I hope they're going to send him on loan, because I'd love to keep Shane Savile.
He's a great keeper. I mean, I've said it several times. I saw a game we played against Luton when we lost 1-0 up there.
Yeah.
And he kept score down. He was
brilliant. Always maintained that Supple is a superb player. Who I just don't get this whole thing about not playing him at all.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get the experience unless you run on, are you?
No.
You get enough.
Absolutely.
I think there's one or two players who, for whatever reason, have fallen out of favour with Jim Magill. Dan Harding's another one. He's not even kicked the ball so far in pre-season. And once you go that way, then it's a very long road back. I mean, Cito managed it. He was out of Jim's plan for a long time, and he managed to come back.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, you just wonder that.
We shall see. All this to be discussed on the Naked Football Show when it returns in 2 weeks.
Yes, back in a minority
sport thing. Shane Supple was a Gaelic footballer as well.
And he was.
Yes.
So I had to play for Cork in the future.
There you go.
That's what I'm doing next week, Phil. I won't be here. I'll be flying back from Ireland, but I hope to give you a full report on the the two hurling quarterfinals.
Yes. Well, I'll be here on my own unless I get some guests lined up, so I best crack onto that between now and this time next week. And the week after that, Naked Football's back with Graham and Phil Ham. So, yes, it's time for us to go now. Unfortunately, let's play this obscure track again. Where's it gone?
All hail with Derek Griffiths. Good night.
There we go. Good night.